Hello and welcome to recording number 20 of Gary Gygax's Saga of Old City, an annotated reading. I'm going to restart here on page 141, paragraph 2. Gord was gratified that he had come with a fat purse, for the pickings were far from ample in Stoink. Everyone was busy trying to steal from his neighbor. And of course, those neighbors with anything worth taking were exceptionally vigilant with respect to guarding their valuables. Jan, Crowbait, and Colonus took their splits and drifted off to revel in whatever sinks of debauchery they favored. Gord found an inn, Three Gables, on the west end of town, and there he settled down to reconnoiter. For the first week or so, he would occasionally encounter one or another of the three bandits, but evidently they ran out of funds and went elsewhere to seek more, for Gord never ran into them again. He certainly didn't miss their company, for the nine wards of Stoink provided sufficient entertainment. After a few weeks, however, exploration and discovery began to weary him. If the town was an odd mixture of buildings, its polyglot population was even stranger. From the throngs of freebooters, bargemen, and riffraff of Rat's Wharf, where cargo stolen from who knew where arrived daily, to Haldroon's rowdy encampment of brigand gangs and mercenary companies, there were all races of men, near men, and humanoids. Stoink offered something to suit the taste, base or not, of part resident and visitor alike. The shops carried goods from every part of the Flaness, from distant parts of the Great Kingdom, the backlunis states of Tuzmit and Ekbir. Every place seemed to produce some item that the robber bands eventually brought here. Interspersed with these shops, of the vice dens, taverns, slave pens, and unidentified establishments were the stores where normal artisans, craftsmen, and tradesfolk made and sold their wares. The apparently large number of legitimate businesses surprised Gord at first, but then he realized it was logical that such a population needed the goods and services of any normal community, as well as those endeavors directly related to banditry. Rat's Wharf boasted a rope walk, tanneries, and a brisk trade in small spars and timber. In Stoink proper, the tanned leather of aurochs, horses, and more exotic creatures was worked into leather goods of all sorts, especially armor and shields of exceptional quality. Gord learned that large shipments of such were sent to outfit soldiers and adventurers of the lands around the near Dev and beyond. The origin of the armor was not advertised naturally. Break. All right, now, quite a bit of information about Stoink right here. We get that there is a polyglot population. So, in a sense, we have Greyhawk, City of Greyhawk, is something that is a, very cosmopolitan place, but I think you can kind of picture Stoink as a lower kind of level than that. We don't really know much that there is a boss Lord Mayor of Stoink, Boss Daly, and Stoink is a little bit of fantasy Chicago here, and it might be worthwhile looking at the size and environs of Chicago in the 70s. Gygax liked to do that sort of thing with his home campaign. Although, later he became more involved in doing a campaign that was more by the setting, the published setting. So here we have that Stoink is actually a poor picking place for thievery. Everyone is trying to steal. Also, that the ones who actually had things worth stealing were very, very much guarded their valuables. So we can picture a Stoic probably having, you know, a very low, poor communities, but also areas where the more wealthy probably had little houses that were part fortification, and definitely would have guards to protect from, you know, the other citizens. Gord sees the his three bandit companions take off and then disappear forever. There's an inn, the Three Gables, and he says on the west end of town, so you could imagine that that is probably a mid to better level place to stay, because I don't think at this point Gord would be looking for a dive like he would in you know, at other times. We learned that there are 9 wards of Stoic, and I would say the wards are probably just another name for a quarter.
I think this might be the most we get out of any of the cities so far.
I mean, there is quite a bit here. Now, we also learn that the that there's this Rat's Wharf in Haldrun, and Haldrun sounds like it might not be walled because it's an encampment of brigand gangs and mercenary companies. It doesn't look, I see that, you know, here we have a question about hints on what the pre-Bandit Kingdom Stoic City was about, and we got that more in yesterday's reading, recording number 19. It's very brief, but the original Stoic was, you know, a bastion. It was part of the Great Kingdom, a frontier fortress and town. And at this point, it's been, I believe, 600 years since then. And Stoic became first an independent community and then became a bandit kingdom. And as bandit kingdoms go, this is a really, there's a lot of information here. And we have an idea of how, like this business with Rat's Wharf, what it talks about is that there is, you know, not only a place where goods are being received by the river, but also that there's places to repair boats and ships, and also that there is goods coming from distant parts, from everywhere in the Flaness and even the Baclunish states. So it speaks to, there's a mention that there are even slave pens. So here we know that Stoic practices slavery, and you wonder about the general population outside the community. They're supposed to be independent and, you know, have this like freedom-loving, independent, and more toward a little chaotic. So it doesn't sound like the slavery has moved to the point where the general population outside the city has slaves. There probably are some, but it doesn't sound like all the farmers are slave farms and stuff. It just sounds like slavery is part of the part and parcel of what is in the city. It would be, you know, a key place on the very edge here of more civilized lands, which could explain why it's actually seems like a large city-state with 50 to 70,000 people in the whole area. It talks about, here we have talk about what's in Rat's Wharf. I'm not sure what a rope walk is, but I would assume it is simply a place that makes, you know, produces rope. There's tanneries and a trade in spars and timber. We have a place where there's leather for aurochs, horses, and exotic creatures worked into leather goods, and armor and shields, which then Stoic is, exporting such armor, and it sounds like it's exporting it all around the Near Devs, so that would be like Radagast City and Lukesh. And boy, you know, that really Stoink really has the sound of a pretty vibrant city. All right. Now, we actually, you know, we have, so Stoink also, like I said, Haldroon, which is one of the suburbs, it's a routing encampment of brigand gangs and mercenary companies with all races of men, near men, and humanoids. So that's, you know, demi-humans and humanoids. Yeah, I can really see, because Gygax was talking about doing a Stoink, you know, a setting adventure, or not a setting material for Stoink being very well developed. And you can see that it's kind of like one of the Barbary Coast cities, you know, where there's, you know, an outlaw city, but still ruled with a, you know, an overall iron hand, I'd expect, from Boss Daly. So I really get the, Stoink would have been a very interesting place to go, with huge possibilities of adventures, an area where, you know, the outlaws and bandits and slavers could come and be safe from, you know, the more law-abiding places to the south. And it really does sound like a quite exciting place.
Yeah, so, it sounds great. I know very little about the Band of Kingdoms. Is Stoink its own kingdom, or is it the capital of another kingdom?
Well, Stoink is mentioned in the book here as a city-state. Okay. Now, there are there is a Dragon Magazine article called Where the Bandits Are, and it has a kind of Darlene map, but a close-up that shows you each of the bandit kingdoms. Now, each of the bandit kingdoms is centered around usually one large town or small city with an area they control around it, but they're continually, I believe there's continual like warfare between them, so that if you're too weak or you're not in like an alliance with several of them, and the alliances change all the time, that where the bandits are. That, but that I believe is far less detailed. Like I think this is probably just about the most information you're going to find on Stoink. No, I can't remember it being as heavily detailed. And the bandit kingdoms themselves aren't heavily detailed. I had a project where I was starting to detail them for my own campaign. And probably the most inspiring thing I found for the whole area is Where the Bandits Are from Dragon Magazine. All right. I'm going to start again. Here it is, page 142, paragraph 3. After traffic and stolen goods, the next mainstay of the economy was slave trading. That major industry brought buyers from many distant places and was the main revenue source for the town itself. Haldroon was a thriving village dominated by taverns, brothels, gambling parlors, and similar places aimed at separating arriving bandits and freelancers from their coinage. Amid the squalor, though, were also weapon forges, horse traders, and all manner of provisioners and suppliers. I should also mention that in the previous one, he also talks about how much he was mentioning the normal crafters and artisans that were in the city, and he was Gord was surprised at that. But then he realized that such a large place and such a busy place needed that. And if you look that they're producing export goods, they're a repair place for the barges and boats. You know, and so here we have a very vibrant place, but also, you know, a very wild place. It's a strange combination here. I would say, like, Boss Daly sounds like he's, you know, got the bent for law and order within his own, you know, running it his way. But then the city itself also has, like, these chaotic elements. And now here we learn that the slave trade is the major industry. And you know, that really it kind of speaks to where Stoink seems to be given like a you know, this eye to you know, like the other kingdom, the other nations around the bandit kingdoms and near to Stoink, they seem to be giving Stoink, like, they don't want to look too closely into it, so that they can, you know, reap the benefits of the you know, the banditry, the slave trade. And that tells you something about the other kingdoms, which might be considered good kingdoms. Every one of them is going to have an evil side and an adventuring element. Because, I mean, it is an adventuresome setting. And I think that implies that if you're going to have areas that on the surface, they might look lawful and peaceful, but then you're going to have it where there are, you know, cults and conspiracies and slave traders and all this stuff going through it. So your characters can stop by, like in Nyrond or Furyundi or Valuna, and expect to have like this nice, orderly society. And yet, even within those countries, there's probably going to be some dark sides that are hidden away. Whereas Stoink itself is right out in the open about being a place of, you know, an evil place. We're also told that Haldrun is a thriving village. So I would guess that Haldrun and is a Haldrun
Ratswarf.
They must be separated, and I would think that would mean that they're beyond the city walls. You know, I mean, we know that Stoink is considered walled, and we know that Haldrun and Ratswarf are considered suburbs and villages. And since, like, Haldrun is the place where there are mercenary companies and, you know, bandit groups, I would think that it would be very dangerous, walls or not, to raid Haldrun, because it's like a military encampment, and a very wild one. But still, I, you know, monstrous tribes and, you know, demi-human groups, that is a, you know, like, you could do an adventure where you're one of those things, or you're coming to recruit you know, a mercenary group from anywhere from, like, you know, a small squad of people to a big company. And that you could all do right there in Stoink. You could have a thing where you're going to try to retrieve some item, or here, since slaving is a big thing. Now look at the concept in the Slave Lords modules, where they're this, you know, very evil group. And yet here, right out in the open, we have Stoink. All right.
Oh, do you think there's a strong evil contingent in the Pale, even, like, maybe underneath, or?
Yes, man. I would say my feeling of the Pale is that you really would have, you know, the maybe they. I think it would be a problem with the Pale considering themselves to be doing good when others might be considering that they're doing evil. I think the Pale is probably a very dangerous place to be, because on the one hand, it might seem like, you know, a normal, pleasant place. And then we were told about the Pale that even like that Red Mod and the Capital, they have their, you know, they have their to others would be immorality with brothels and stuff, but that they don't put up with thievery. You know, so it really is hard to use the alignment system when you get to a different level, that you can't really do benchmarks on cultures and people, that they can be a combination of things. And I think the Pale is probably a good example of how what might be classified as a good nation has a lot of elements that a lot of other people would consider evil. And Stoink, which is called chaotic here, also seems to have a lot of structure to allow there to be, you know, the crafting and I would imagine like Lake Boss Daily is keeping everything in line. And so even the concepts of lawn chaos, they don't really, you know, some people can be chaotic in some respects and lawful in others. And I just don't think that you can really put your thumb down on one of these broad alignments and cover what is.
Yeah, it's not necessarily, alignment isn't necessarily a cookie cutter that like applies universally.
Yeah, and I think that's the example that we need to look at in these novels by Gygax, is he is trying to portray something with more touch of realism. And, you know, it's to everybody's taste whether they say it's too much or not, but I would say that he's just trying to look at it and say, that not everything is going to be, all one way or another. And so, even though they came up with the alignment system, I think it's always been that further you go, the further you get away from the broad stroke alignments, and you get into, these different shades and combinations within a person and within a society. All right. We get a little description of Haldroon, its taverns, brothels, gambling parlors, and all seems to, and with a squalor, but also the place where there's weapon forges, horse traders, and provisioners and suppliers. Now, I would say Haldroon is probably where you would go to find, adventuring and military goods. And so, like those weapon forgers, definitely that they're there maybe converting. If you needed to sell off weapons, you'd go to Haldroon. If you needed to buy weapons, I think that Haldroon is, really, you're going to look at that as a military encampment. And Rat's Wharf, you're going to see it as the dock areas, that would be interesting. I would assume that Rat's Wharf would maybe be, the walls would be closer to Rat's Wharf to at least be able to fire down into the docks if they, were being invaded. Whereas Haldroon sounds more like it could really take care of itself, since it seems to be a big military encampment. We don't...
It does look like there's a body of river that flows through Stoink.
Yes, it's a small to the south, creek. Isn't it?
Yeah, well, actually, it looks on Anna's map, it's to the north.
Oh, okay. It goes right
through Stoink. I don't know where that, if that's canon or if it was mentioned somewhere.
So we can say then that probably Stoink itself would be overlooking the docking areas without like fortifying it themselves, and that Rat's Wharf would be the area definitely up against the would have to be up against the river that is there. It does sound like whatever river is there, no matter how it's represented, would have to be deep enough to handle barges and boats, if not not full drafted ships. That would be too much for a smaller river. Already we have these nine wards of Stoink, and I would think that Haldroon and Rat's Wharf are outside the walls and not included in those nine wards.
You're right. Stoink is right on the Artansene.
Okay, and that's a major.
Yeah, river. There's a little creek that goes through it too.
And further north, I believe, is where we have Long's Ford.
Yes.
Where there is a ford in the river up there. But that is quite a way up.
Yeah.
And if it's on the
one of those bends.
And if it's on the Artansame, it goes all the way down to Mudditch, outside of Radagast City, and then into the near Dev.
Which connects it to the rest of the world, really.
I kind of felt that it was implied, although we didn't say it, that the they're Rene here as well, the bargeman. He didn't call them that particularly, but he did mention you know, bargemen and stuff. All right, I'm going to restart. It is page 142. It is paragraph 4. The town gates were open from dawn to dusk, but as the sun's last rays tinged the sky with rosy hues, all large bodies of foreigners were herded outside Stoink, so there was as much nighttime revelry in the two adjoining villages. Gord had sampled the offerings of these villages frequently since arriving in this bandit land. Rat's Wharf and Haldroon had little more than low dives, however, and Gord found he greatly preferred the entertainment of Serpent Lane and Suggle Way to anything outside the walls. Leisure activities of this sort tended to be expensive, so after a few weeks, Gord became more alert for money-making opportunities. Unlike spending opportunities, chances for gain were more scarce around here than honest men and virgins. Certainly his skills enabled him to pick up a few coppers here, a silver noble or so there, but nothing significant. Before much time passed, Gord found himself down to the last few drabs of his share of the bandit loot, and facing the prospect of dipping into his own hoard of electrum, gold, and platinum. He decided it was time to break out his traditional mold and do something productive. Locating the headquarters of the local thieves' guild was simple. It bore a large and colorful sign. Rathard's splendid place was on Safe Avenue, in the Norward, between the Slave Market and Stonegate, the eastern entryway that also divided Stoink's Clay Brick Ward from the administrative Great Wards Complex. Break. All right, so here, this really does start giving us a picture of Stoink. A map would have been nice to have. But here we're now breaking down what the wards are. We have this stone gate. We have that the Thieves Guild is right out in the open. Right by the slave market and something called Norward. So you would expect that probably be the northern ward. At the northern end of the city. We have the business about the town gates and large bodies, but Gord himself was staying at an inn inside, so I would expect that a small party, adventuring group, would be able to stay within the walls. But since this is also a place where there are the large mercenary bands and ship's companies, or maybe large groups of Renee, that they're put outside at dusk. And so we would have, in Rat's Wharf, the little tied-up group of Renee bargemen, and then all these various encampments in Haldroon. You don't know how much violence there is. There may even be, I can imagine, even little bits of warfare between mercenary groups and bandit groups. It doesn't talk yet about what kind of guards are there with Stoink, but I just imagine if it's a city of some size, and Stoink is, as a city-state, has 50 to 70,000 people in the general area, then there must be a regular army that would enforce things beyond the city walls. It doesn't really give a distance on how big Stoink's borders are, but Bandit Kingdom, normally you would find that the borders are more nebulous and that they go back and forth a little bit with the rise and fall of the powers of the other Bandit Kingdoms. All right, I am going to restart on page 143, paragraph 2. Safe Street was a thoroughfare linking the fortress area of the lords of the city with the bustling slave bazaar to the north. Gord enjoyed the street names for the routes leading to the marketplace. Safe, Joy, Shackle. Cute folk, these Stoinkers. This seemed both a logical and cautious place for headquarters to be, near the most prosperous quarter, with its back to the great blocks of the wall, and having a direct route to the government offices to the south. So thinking, Gord turned the corner of Crook Street, another enjoyable name, and crossed the Pike Street Safe Street. In a short time, he was within the confines of the thieves' home base. To recover stolen property, a dun-clad fellow asked mildly from a trestle table that served as a desk, separating the building's vestibule from access to the interior. Gord surveyed him briefly, shaking his head. The thief guard looked surprised, for Gord appeared to be a well-to-do artisan or merchant, perhaps one who should be uncomfortable in surroundings such as these. Then are you here to hire services? Gord shook his head again and studied the interior of the place, moving so as to be able to peer into the corridor behind the speaker. Okay, buddy, quit gawking, and tell me what the hell you do want. Are you lost, stupid, or a sightseer? At this last question, the guard got out of his chair, strode around the desk, and none too gently took Gord by the arm to hush him out. I'm here to join the guild, Gord said blandly. Thief paused in his effort to hustle in the strangely hard-to-move fellow outside and laugh. Who put you up to this anyway? He said, his tone growing less jocular. It's a piss-poor joke. You're lucky I'm taking it easy with you. As this last was said, the guard found that Gord had somehow turned and was moving behind him and back into the room again. Now the thief was getting peevish. No joke, friend, Gord told the slowly reddening fellow as he sprang lightly atop the desk and then into the guard's chair. I'm an accomplished master, and I'm here to inscribe my name on your register. This was too much for the man, and he reached for his dagger, but his hand grasped nothing, and he stared down in amazement at the empty scabbard. He glared up toward the interloper. He found Gord cleaning his nails with the weapon. Worse yet, a small pile of his belongings were on the table in front of this bold fellow. That's it, asshole, he said, leaping for Gord. The thief landed with a crash where Gord had been sitting a moment before, then slumped to the floor as pounding footsteps approached from within the building. The poor rogue managed to regain his feet and look around in a daze. I'm here, Gord said nearly in his ear, from a cross-legged seat atop the trestle table, and I still wish to register. Damn it, Stoat, what are you doing out here? The speaker was a man of powerful build and no-nonsense expression. He stood in the hall behind the desk, glaring alternately at the guard and at Gord with one bright gray eye, and a black leather patch covering the other socket. The man had an authoritative air that Gord immediately perceived, even more impressive in his own way than Gord remembered Arentol to be. Was he a high-ranking thief, the master of this guild, or something else altogether? Gord smiled at the man, who was surveying him, and nodded a greeting, not committing himself with words until he saw what would happen next. Listen, Geller, the fellow now identified as Stoat whined. I didn't do nothing but try to keep this shit out of here, but he got rough. Look out for him, he's fast, he warned. Break. All right, well, here we have a couple things. Geller, who becomes, you know, later on, is somebody you're going to see developed in the Gord series. So here is the first time Gord meets him. And then we see that Gord, I don't think this is a change. I just think it's kind of indicative of Gord's, maybe, you know, since he's not really that evil, he's more of a neutral, that I think we see here with Gord seeing how much he enjoyed the names of Safe, Joy, and Shackle and Crook Street. And he doesn't seem to have any problem with the slaves. I think that's a pretty that I don't think we could classify Gord as good, but I don't think we'd put him down as evil either. So I think this shows him to be more of a neutral. And then we get a description get an idea here of what the Stoink Thieves Guild is like, and with the idea that somebody's coming to either hire thieves or buy back stolen merchandise. So I think that really shows that this is an even different city than Greyhawk is, and just very open to the ideas that the Thieves Guild is just an integral part of the city, if not, it's maybe not one of the ruling things as it was in the city of Greyhawk, where Arentall was one of the directors. But it's definitely, Stoink is showing that the Thieves Guild, it's operating just like a normal business. It has a street sign.
Yeah, it's funny that it's like a lot. It's a lost and found, but you pay for your goods.
And, you know, as Gord said, this isn't a great place for a thief. And so you wonder, the Thieves Guild is probably making its coin in other ways, probably, you know, fencing goods or, I don't know, it just, and they're higher. They're the talk that you come there to buy back your goods are higher. It kind of speaks that maybe anything stolen gets turned over to the Thieves Guild to allow people to buy it back. It's not a normal structure. Again, it kind of reminds me of that Star Trek episode where they were all the whole society had taken on the 20s gangster culture. And I just wonder if that's part of the idea of where Gygax got his idea for a city of Stoink. But there are historical examples of pirate towns. There was a show called Black Sails that had a pirate town in it. So we have various pirate towns in the east and along the Ivory Coast. And we had these pirate towns in the Asian areas. So I think we can find a lot of examples, both in history and popular fiction, of what Stoink would be like.
It kind of reminded me of Robin Hood again, with everywhere that, what was the guy's name, Sloat or...
Dope?
Yeah, everywhere he looked for Gord, and Gord wasn't there. He turned around and Gord was like had his knife and was cleaning out his nails. And like Robin Hood in the castle when he was exceptionally athletic.
And then we also have the theme of being able to see, a little deeper, because he immediately looks at Geller and he recognizes in him these qualities, superior qualities. And obviously Gord is an experienced thief. And yet, very recently, he was not too experienced a hand-to-hand or general combat fighter. So, and then we see who the guy Stoat, who's manning the table there, seems like very low-level thief, very low-level NPC thief. And Gord, obviously, at this point, seems like a mid to even a higher-level thief. And being able to do these things where he steals the dagger out of Stoat's sheath and steals, his purse from off of him without him knowing about it, and there it all is, and being able to twist around Stoat, and, it just, here we're seeing Gord, who is moving up to be more of a, moving really up on the strengths of a higher level adventurer or hero.
I think that would make a very funny scene in a movie. Gord just like taking all the guy's stuff and just making him look like a fool.
And I've found that, like reading this through, I'm much more impressed by the story. I'm always thrown by the kind of early 20th century style of speech, but it's that is what it's going to be. And I don't think it detracts too much. And once you're used to it, you're just used to that is how the talk is going to be.
Yeah, I don't think we've heard too many upper class people talk that way.
No, well, you know, very few encounters just at that gambling hall, where Gord was gambling in the high quarter. We really haven't been exposed to many encounters with upper class. You know, I think this really starts to flesh out what you're going to look for in Stoink as someplace different or maybe even unique compared to the other cities. And again, outside of the Pale, almost every area we've run into, Radagast City, Lukesh, they have in Carpona, they have all had thieves guilds, and they've all had, you know, kind of like, I can't remember with Radagast and Lukesh if they had a thieves quarter. They did have the down quarter, which I believe was in Carpona. So, you know, thievery, and of course we're seeing all this from a thief's point of view. Thievery seems to be the general. You know, you're going to find that in most places in the Flaness that we've run into so far. Now, we've only run into the County of Ernst, the Duchy of Ernst. There's no real mention about what the culture of Nyrund or Furyandi or Keolind or Viluna would be like. We know that the Pale is very harsh on thieves. Not so. I mean, I could even see where the Pale might consider. I don't know. It's not showing things as clearly as good and evil. There's always a mixture of what is going on, but obviously Stoink is meant to be more toward the evil here. All right. Hold on 1 minute. I'm going to restart, and it is page 144, and we are on paragraph. We're on page 9. No, I'm sorry, paragraph 9, page 144, and I'm restarting. Taking Stoat at his word, Geller moved to draw his sword and take care of things in his own way. Seeing this, Gord laughed merrily and held his smile. "Hold on," he said. "I did no harm to Stoat's person, only to his pride. When I put on a performance, he came to escort me out, and as he tried, I stripped him of dag, money, and all. Look here," Gord cried, pointing to the loot and letting out another laugh. Geller abandoned his threatening posture, slammed his sword back in its sheath, and stared at the evidence. Then he looked hard at Stoat with the hint of a smile on his face. "Come on, Geller. The asshole threw me over the desk," Stoat argued. "You jumped over it to attack me. Only I wasn't there to get," Gord countered mildly. Then, for good measure, he added flippantly, "You're the asshole." At that, the grin disappeared from Geller's face. "Never mind who is or isn't a sphincter muscle here," he said again, directing his attention to Gord. "What the hell do you want?" "I'm an accomplished thief, Gord by name, here to join the guild. Stoat here can testify to my abilities." "No screwing round or horseplay at headquarters, see?" Geller interrupted. He sized up Gord in silence for a moment. "No more of this crap with fellow thieves either. Even if they are assholes," he continued. "Now come on back, and I'll get you enrolled. It costs a lucky if you're beyond journeyman status. Dues are a noble a month, whether or not you score, and we take the usual 20%. Gord moved to follow him. Geller turned back to Stoat. "Now keep a better watch, chump, and don't be mistaking your fellows for marks anymore," ordered as Stoat sullenly set about repocketing his possessions. Geller took Gord into a large chamber inside the headquarters. "In case you haven't figured it out," he said, "I have a high station, shall we say, within this organization. You're fortunate that I, and not one of Stoat's peers, happened along when you made your ostentatious entrance. Now let's see how serious you really are about joining the guild. Drake. Well, that seems, you know, it seems a fairly expensive. I think that's a higher take. I think it was only 10 or 15% tithe in the city of Greyhawk, and here it's 20%. And the dues, of course, dues for a master are a noble a month, which, you know, to Gord in the city when he was taking in so much gold and platinum would be, you know, fairly lesser. And Gord had become very, jaded about what the coin meant. So, you know, he was thinking if he didn't have 12 gold on him, he was, not doing well. Now, we have nothing. Gord just mentioned earlier that he was down to his last drab of the loot that he had taken from the brigands. But his own purse and, like, that golden reliquary were... Oh, no, the golden reliquary.
Yeah, that went with the, Finn. What was it, Finn?
Finn, the quarterstaff guy. Yeah, that's right. He doesn't have that anymore, which he felt was just as good because he thought that the cannon of Red Maud and his troops was able to track it.
Right.
Gord still has a sizable collection of coin if he has what he took from... Radagast City and Lukesh and Greyhawk when he left. It's indeterminate because, he seemed to have a lot more gold before he got to, Lukesh and to Radagast City. He seemed to have, really dwindled down to a few gold pieces. And he didn't really do well again. But then at Carpona, he robbed, I believe it was Carpona where he robbed the jeweler. Oh, the.
I thought Adelie robbed the warehouse.
Yeah. They robbed the warehouse. That's right. The jeweler.
Yeah, they actually robbed the thieves, right? Because they were going in. The thieves showed him all this stuff. He set himself up as an easy mark. And before they could do the bait and switch, he hit the warehouse and took it all.
Exactly. That was Carpona. Radagast City is where Adaz, he used her as a distraction to rob the jewelers.
Right.
All right. So we have here. More about the Thieves Guild, and then a little more about Geller, that Geller is high up in the running of the Thieves Guild, and that Stoat Stoat's obviously a lower level thief, and any of these structures are very like a pyramid, so that the greatest number are usually the lowest level.
It seems like Stoat isn't really qualified to do anything else, and like maybe even they tried to have him as a regular thief, but all he can do is mind the front desk.
Yeah, and he seems more like a thug than a normal thief. It also, I don't get the impression that Stoat is very young, it would just seem to be that maybe... the thieves have in the city have a very hard time gaining experience. You know, that a lot of the thievery in the city is simply seems more like middlemen. You know, maybe the thieves bring stuff to the guild to be sold back to the owners and fenced. Because Stoat seems like more like a thug.
And an enforcer, maybe.
Yeah. Yet not a warrior enforcer. He's referred to as a thief guard. So he could even be some NPC that would be like a first or zero level guarding, you know, with some thief skills.
Hmm.
All right. I'm going to restart, and we are on page 145, second to last paragraph. Geller summoned a messenger and instructed him to fetch six other individuals for a meeting. He introduced Gord to these men, all master thieves, and inform Gord that they would pass judgment on his request for membership. Then Geller sat back and ordered Gord to tell his story. To be on the safe side, Gord told the audience that he was from Lukesh. He briefly recounted his travels in Ernst and the Theocracy, omitting most details, including the fact that he was associated with the Rene Wagon folk. The less they actually knew about him, the better. After all, what was actually important was his talent as a thief. This was established readily enough by the successful performance of a few simple tests for the benefit of the master thieves, followed by Geller's recounting to them of Stoat's embarrassing experience in the entranceway. With the preliminaries out of the way, Gord paid over the initiation fee of one Electrum coin, plus a silver one for the first month's due. His name was written on the guild register. A writ of identification was prepared for him, and the rules of thievery and stoink were carefully explained to him by Assistant Guildmaster Uwe Pollock. No establishment protected by Boss Daly could be touched. These places were marked by the official blazon of stoink. All other spots were fair game, although it seemed to be the thieves' opinion that there were damn few other locations worth bothering with. Marks were marks, but mayoral guards, the watch, town officials, and a raft of others were considered off-limits. The enumeration went on and on until Gord's head began to swim. His initial impression of stoink as a veritable playground for thieves was apparently somewhat inaccurate, to put it mildly. "This place is worse than winter," Chivany exclaimed with disgust. "At least a thief there can steal from anybody, though the risk be death." "That brings me to part about punishments here," replied Uwe Pollock. He then proceeded to detail all of the things a thief would suffer upon being caught in the commission of a felony, or if apprehended afterward, unless the protection of the guild was obtained by reporting a successful job to officials at any of the various and constantly shifting sub-headquarters that the thieves maintained in the 9 wards of the city. An assassin could still be sent after a thief, of course, even after he or she was safe from the law. But that seldom happened, Uwe added, for the expense of hiring a killer was great and the property wasn't returned even if the thief was dispatched. As Gord was preparing to make his leave, Geller came up to him and said in a friendly tone, "It's a rotten place to make a dishonest drab, but after a while the town grows on you." "So does Greenslime," Gord retorted. As Gord mentions, this seems worse than Wintershiven. It does. He could be, again, just an independent thief in Stoink, but chasing him down would be the Thieves Guild and the Guard and the Watch. Here, as an official thief, it is a little similar to the city of Greyhawk, where he can rob from some places, but report to the guild and get some kind of protection. But still with the chance of having some kind of retribution brought down upon him. And more than likely, Mayor Daly would bring retribution down on anyone, robbing his places that he controls and that he's doing protection over. We're told that there are shifting headquarters in all 9 wards of the city. This comment, and I Geller mentions that it is a dishonest drab. So that makes me think that I would imagine that maybe Stoink doesn't have its own coinage, but simply accepts coinage from other places. It could have a full system. It's mentioning iron drabs here. So that seems to be some kind of accepted coinage. And I'd imagine that in a place like this, they're going to see coins from all over. They're, you know, like they're robbing and thieving, and there's goods from all over, including the Baclunish states. So I would imagine that there's all kind of coinage, and there may not be an official stoink coin. Or there could. There could be a thing where you had to use stoink coinage, and that would be another way for, Boss Daily to make some money. And finally, Gord mentions green slime. Now, I that could be something that, especially coming from the slum quarters, that could be something that he was well aware of even back when he was an orphan in the slum quarters. In my game, you'd encounter things like that in the sewers, and definitely there is a sewer system, wide sewer system mentioned when Gord got to the Thieves Guild and the Beggars Guild, and it's how the beggars would go back and forth across the city of Greyhawk. All right, I'm going to restart here. It is page 146, the final paragraph. "Tell you what," the one-eyed man said in a placating way. "You and I go over to Haldroon. I've seen only a little of your work, and I'd like to see more. Besides, I hear that a bunch just arrived that hit it big. We can both pick up some change." Color toward Gold that the Horn and Haunch was the best tavern in the whole urban area, not just in Haldroon. So they went there. The place had a typical afternoon crowd, although the drinkers appeared a bit better dressed than in the places Gord had been to. Most were obviously mercenaries, bandits, or worse, but they wore oiled mail or well-preserved leather. Studding on Jack and Bernie were well-polished. Cloth garments were neither shoddy nor in need of cleaning and mending. Most surprising of all, there was no overpowering odor of sweat and horses. The place was a marvel indeed, and the wenches were most pretty and buxom, too. Gord was happy he decided to humor Geller, or vice versa, no matter. "This is one of the most pleasant gathering places I've ever frequented," said Geller. "Even as well-traveled as you are," he added with a smirk, "I expect you will find it the same. Now for some refreshment." Geller recommended some of the dry white wine from Furyundi to begin with. After several goblets of the stuff, Gord felt quite able to attack the tavern's bill of fare, and soon food was set before him. Bub, the proprietor, fitted his name quite well, and this worthy, together with a woman to see to their drink and a lad to step and fetch, personally attended the pair. Geller was evidently a regular here and well regarded by Tub. More of the crisp apple-fragranced wine was poured for them as their host set a pewter salver before them. It was filled with morsels of radishes with black skins, smoked rounds of eel, scallions, and pickles. All of it tasted delicious, especially washed down with the Furyundian vintage. They also had a small loaf of bread with a golden and crispy crust and soft white crumb. The whole was gone all too soon. Gord was about to call for more when bowls of pink liquid were placed before them. The stuff was a thick, creamy soup of a sort he had never tasted. Geller told him it was made from the young giant crayfish taken from the mill pond of Agile Creek. It was made with wine, cream, and herbs, and plus only Tub knew what. Gord felt like licking the bowl clean when he'd finished the last spoonful he could get out of it. Break. Well, we've got a little detail. It does seem that this nice place is right in Haldroon, but there would have to be a better place for, like, say, the upper, the officers, and the better mercenary commanders, and the more successful bandits. Maybe a cut above general banditry. Now, And then we get describing the food, which, you know, is interesting to hear about and get a detail of what you could have in your own Campaign's Tavern. And that the Furiandi wine is an apple wine. It tells you a little bit about what you're going to find in Furiandi, with probably large apple orchards if they're getting, if they're exporting this Furiandian wine.
Yes, yeah, if I wasn't eating already, I'd be hungry after reading this.
Yeah, that was a nice little bit of description, and something that DMs can really look toward in enhancing their campaign. Because, you know, this is a simple role-playing kind of thing. It adds atmosphere and color, and so a well-described meal, I think that can be a nice little thing to add to the campaign. And if you add little touches, like say, there is a job for them to rob, say, a shipment of the Furiandi and apple wine. You know, you could use a little tag like that to, you know, enhance the game and make a point about having these details. You know, so that could be described, and then you could have the, you know, the other thieves or the players, you know, looking for that kind of work, or being asked to protect a caravan taking this wine. So, you know, there's lots of opportunities right here. All right, I'm afraid it's 7 o'clock, and I've got to get going tonight. So I am going to end things for tonight. This was the 20th recording. You can find the archives of these recordings on the Cannonfire website. Hopefully we're going to be getting a link from the homepage, you know, when Gary is able to. And yes, this last meal took place in Haldrun, the mercenary bandit humanoid village, which is where any large bodies of men they're pushed out the gate, and they either go to Haldrun or Ratswarfs, which are two villages. And I would just suspect that, you know, ships, companies and stuff, they go to Ratswarf and maybe Teamsters and things. And Haldrun is mainly a soldier's camp. Well, I'm going to say good night, and I will hopefully see everybody tomorrow.
Good night.
Night. Oops.